On today's episode of Yours Mentally, we're going to be talking about some mental health symptoms and disorders that a lot of us have heard about, but we don't really know the details of those disorders. We often hear about these disorders on television. Our friends talk about them. We read about them in books. We've heard about them in school. But no one really tells us in depth about these disorders. On this episode, we speak about the symptoms of mental health disorders. This is probably one of the most fun and knowledge-enriching discussions I've had in the podcast so far. I personally learned so much from it and also at the same time had a lot of fun doing this episode with Arushi. This episode is in conversation with Arushi Singh, who's a counseling psychologist. So without further ado, let's get right into the episode.
So on today's episode where we talk about mental health disorders that need more awareness, Arushi, can you explain to us what exactly a disorder is, and can you also talk about a few common mental health disorders that are seen?
Okay, so a disorder is something that's essentially disturbing, distressing, and starts interfering with your life. I can have traits and symptoms of something, but until it gets blown up into something that interferes with my daily living or is actually hampering my productivity, it doesn't get labeled as a diagnosis. And of course, you have different bodies. Like for mental health, you have the ICD-10 and you have DSM-5 that's come up, which help you create a certain standard criteria. So it can't be that I'm distressed for 5 days and I suddenly have a diagnosis, right? Or I have a disorder. It becomes that you have to be going through XYZ number of symptoms for about 6 months, and then it gets classified into a complete disorder. For example, I'm going to pick up anxiety. All of us feel anxious from time to time. Some people are more likely to feel anxious in certain situations. But there's a difference in saying that I have a diagnosis of an anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder, versus I am someone who gets easily anxious. And the difference is literally based on A, the diagnostic criteria, B, the duration of distress being faced, and see how much it interferes and hampers with your life. You asked me for common mental health disorders. Anxiety, one in every third person has it. Depression, one in every fourth person. Now, due to the pandemic, there is also burnout that's coming in because we have no boundaries. A lot of people have been taking care of their loved ones. So compassion fatigue, right? Which is the more emotional or the more personal form of burnout, where, I mean, compassion fatigue is as, I mean, it sounds like what it is. That panic attack, social anxiety, all under the ambit of anxiety. Yeah, those are pretty much things that come up like every day and very frequently. The rest is something that people still hesitate to speak about. So, for example, even sexual disorders come under mental health disorders, but we see very few people speak about it because stigma and association of how fertile one is or how quote unquote manly one is and all of that.
So you spoke about social anxiety, and I recently studied about agoraphobia. Do you think that has probably, I know it's a phobia, do you think that has increased in the pandemic like a lot, like, you know, socializing with people? If I'm not wrong, agoraphobia is this fear of socializing with people, right?
No. So agoraphobia is the fear of avoiding places or situations. Anxiety is difficulty in interacting. So even it could even be something like you're picking up your phone to call for a pizza and you'll be like, I can't do this. It comes with a lot of fear of being judged, or, you know, people will think I'm silly, I don't know how to interact, and of course, negative past experiences. So they are different, and both of them, in fact, have seen an increase in, you know, during the last 2 years. A lot of, we learn socializing by socializing. There is no other way to it. We go to school, we get teased, we make friends, we have peer pressure, we fall apart. All of that happens and helps in the process of socialization. When children these days are, you know, behind the computers, they're learning virtually, interactions are very virtual, they're in that protected environment where it is just the people who are always going to be like, yeah, you can come and talk to me. And these are the people that the kids have been talking to. or even for people who are starting work, right? A lot of freshers have joined a work from home space. So they don't know what that hesitancy is or how to socialize or where to find your friends or what orientation looks like. Will these things increase? Yes, because our hesitancies will increase. There's a lot of memes going around that says that, you know, I have forgotten how to socialize. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that is on a lighter note. But on a more serious note, it is now even more draining to, you know, drive down even 15 minutes and meet someone.
Yeah.
And that hesitancy is what will eventually lead to doubts. And those doubts will lead to, am I good enough? Is this going okay? Lead to some level of anxiety. And in some cases where there are predisposing factors, probably trigger social anxiety. So the lack of societal interaction and the lack of peer, you know, communication or face-to-face interactions is going to have its repercussions.
Right. Also, you previously spoke about burnout. I feel like a lot of people are feeling burnt out, you know, in the pandemic, because I feel like schools and workplaces have just increased the workload, because for some reason they think if it's work from home, you know, why not give the students and employees, you know, a lot more work than they usually do. And I feel like another thing that they don't look at is the mental health aspect. Schools obviously are coming up with it, but I feel like a lot of workplaces in India don't really care about it. Like, they don't give it much importance. There are very few. Like, I remember discussing with someone else that a lot of companies last year after the Sushant Singh Rajput's, you know, death, they started incorporating mental health services in their companies. And it was not obviously because they cared. It obviously for, you know, a PR stunt is what I personally felt it was, because if they really cared, I don't think it would be an immediate reaction to the situation that had happened. And I feel like even in general, I don't see companies really promoting mental health of their employees, you know. They're always trying to get the most out of their employees without actually seeing, you know, what their mental state is. So I feel that's probably one of the reasons why a lot of people feel burnt out in the pandemic. What's your take on that?
It's a cutthroat world, right? And it is a capitalistic world. So what speaks is money. Are companies interested in employees' mental well-being? It's a toss-up question. Some are, maybe doing a PR stunt, but some do. There are lots of leaders who've come up and spoken about their mental health concerns and why it's important. So I wouldn't make a blanket statement to say that it's completely PR-based, because there are good ones out there and there are not so, you know, ones that aren't so good. It's also been a situation for everyone where they don't know what to do. And mental health was something that always existed but was on a back burner. So the pandemic also kind of brought forth the epidemic of mental health that everybody was facing. And, you know, and there's something tangible to go to, right? For physical health, okay, this is going to be a longish answer. So for physical health, we have blood reports that say that your insulin levels are off, right? And we have that tangible thing we action on. Everybody is encouraging us to not touch the sweets, all of that. In mental health, there is nothing tangible as such. No blood report is going to show you anything. No x-ray is going to, you know, give you anything. It literally is your word and the clinician's word. So when grief and loss started coming in, it gave something tangible that, oh yeah, we are facing collective grief. We're facing uncertainty. Uncertainty is, you know, a very close synonym for anxiety, if I may call it. So It also gave something tangible for people to speak up on or for people to feel. And that's how some of the initiatives came up. And some people have stuck to it. Some people have not. Has that in any way stopped employers from burdening their employees? Absolutely not. Because again, numbers went for a toss in the pandemic. People didn't have food to eat, so working and buying products was out of the question. And the lack of numbers does put pressure on the company, be it the CEO or, you know, someone on the managerial level or someone at the employee level, right? And nobody knew how to deal with that. So it was also everybody's personal uncertainties and professional uncertainties and something completely out of the window that you're like, how to deal with it. So did we cause the burnout? Absolutely, we did. Did we know better? Maybe and maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we spoke about anxiety and depression. There are common mental health disorders that, you know, I think a lot of people must have heard about. But there are a few, like, you know, not very common disorders that I would like you to sort of explain. Starting off with paranoia, could you sort of explain what it is and what are its symptoms?
What do you think when you hear the word paranoia?
I think probably immediate fright of certain things, you know. Yeah, that's how I would probably discuss it, explain it.
And in very layman terms, that is what it is. It's extreme distrust, where I feel like you're going to do something to me, or someone's harming me, or they're making extravagant plans of doing that. So I am mm-hmm. constantly on the alert. Mm-hmm. Right? And constantly being on the alert in itself has mental health repercussions. Mm-hmm. You will feel anxious. You will feel drained. You will, you know, not be able to carry on with your tasks because you're like, oh, hey, is that person trying to harm me? Right? Mm-hmm. And that is a very significant level of distress. So it also comes under personality disorder. So you have three clusters of personality disorder, and paranoid personality disorder is part of cluster A. So it's pretty much just that. Like, people are just constantly worrying. Criticism, feedback taking is something that is hampered. And it becomes like, oh, she's criticizing me, and doesn't stop at, oh, I'm being criticized. It goes on to, this person is criticizing me because this person wants to take away my job. This person doesn't want me to succeed in life. And once I don't succeed, they are probably going to make me a vegetable. And, you know, I mean, this mm-hmm. is just conjecture, but so on and so forth. Plus, if I'm make inability to take criticism, mm-hmm. or hypersensitivity for feedback in general can also be a mental health symptom. If I am in a better mood, so as to say, I'm likely to be able to take what the other person is saying and walk away with it. But if mm-hmm. I am already feeling, say, anxious, or if I am upset, or if I'm just distressed and completely fatigued, you say something to me and I will perceive it as an attack. Mm-hmm. So smaller things, you know, like feedback sensitivity or irritability, inability to focus, they are all part of your mental health symptoms that we don't usually take very seriously, but mm-hmm. there are the very early signs of it. So they may not necessarily, you know, go into a full-blown disorder as such, but mm-hmm. it's worth taking stock of it, and it's worth, you know, then starting to do all your preventive measures.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Now, you spoke about, like, common symptoms about it, right? Mm-hmm. Could you, like, probably mention one or two uncommon symptoms that nobody has probably heard of?
So irritability, extremely fatigued, feeling like you can't do multiple things. Or, mm-hmm. You know, your audio intake goes down as opposed to your video intake. Not something mm-hmm. all of us take very seriously. But if we're in a happier mood, we are listening to more music, to more podcasts, to more audiobooks, or reading mm-hmm. more. But when we're in a lowish phase, we tend to mm-hmm. watch more things. So an audiovisual influx coming in. So more Netflix, more YouTube, all of that. So that's something that a lot of people don't notice. But it does stand out. And of course, dependency and craving for sugar. So the minute you know you're craving more sugar, it's a sign to check in. Hair right. fall, brittle bones, brittle nails, body aches, increased mm-hmm. sensitivity to sounds, sights and smells, headaches, migraines, all of that. Right. If your mental health is being hampered, it will show in your physical body somewhere or another.
And how would you say one can treat paranoia? Like, would you suggest them therapy or any other way?
I would suggest therapy. I would suggest therapy not only because this is something to be worked on, but because I feel, and this may be from a biased space, that everyone benefits from therapy. Even if mm-hmm. you don't have a issue to solve, so as to say, you always get to know yourself better. There's something to look forward to. There's something to work on. It does depend on the level of, you know, the paranoia of would the client be referred to a counseling psychologist, a clinical psychologist, or a psychiatrist. But mm-hmm. Mental health interventions are always beneficial. So even if you go to one, they will be able to assess the level and then refer each to someone who is better suited to handle.
Right. So Arushi, you know, a lot of us have heard about intrusive thoughts on television. We've seen it in movies. We've read it in books. Can you talk about intrusive thoughts? What are intrusive thoughts and what are its symptoms?
Do the thoughts that you have on a regular basis, are they wanted or unwanted? Aman?
I'd say most of them are wanted. Some unwanted, I think that's, you know, it does come here and there, but it's not a very, you know, it doesn't dominate me, I'd say. But yeah, more wanted than unwanted, if I had to say.
And the unwanted ones, do you feel like they come up again and again?
Not really. You mean like on different days, on the same day, continuously?
On the same day?
Yeah, I feel like it does, yeah.
Okay, so that's what it is, but on a, again, on a larger spectrum. So intrusive thoughts are thoughts that are disturbing and that I have not asked for or I have not willed it. It's not something that's coming voluntarily. And a lot of times I am unable to stop the thought in its track.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A lot of people feel like saying that these are not my thoughts because they're that disturbed by them. Intrusive mm-hmm. thoughts are never positive. It's never going to tell you, hey, you can do anything. It's going to tell you that, you know, you're going to kill your family or you're mm-hmm. worth nothing or you know, you're on a holiday, but do you know that you did not lock the house and someone will, you know, steal everything? Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of themes that they follow and they kind of appear out of nowhere. So I could mm-hmm. be, say, sitting and having a meal. And I could be thinking about killing my sister.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, if I'm thinking that and if it's coming again and again, if I'm unable to remove that thought from my head or if I am, you know, unable to rationalize against it, it is going to cause me significant distress. And even though I know the thought is not mine, I am, after a while, tempted to question that maybe this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So while most of the individuals do not act on them, do not want to act on them, understand that these thoughts are not theirs, they have a lot of difficulty in trying to tell themselves that or to try to get the thought out, you know, of it. And intrusive thoughts, more often than not, are part of OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So they come in, they tell you you have to do this, you do a relief activity and then you feel calmer. So the next time the thought happens again, your brain's like, remember when you just acted on it and it felt better?
Mm-hmm.
So do it. It's a very simple thing, like you're feeling like there are lots of germs and you're going to give your entire family coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So you know it's not true. You know you haven't stepped out. You haven't touched anything. You know you need to wash your hands for 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But your intrusive thoughts can say that you know you need to wash it for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So for those 3 minutes, you will be washing your hands and then you'll feel better. So the next time this thought comes in, you're going to be like, your brain's automatically going to be like, remember the last time I just washed it and it went away? I'm mm-hmm. going to indulge in that activity again. What the temporary relief does it crystallizes a pattern of, you know, the intrusive thoughts getting strengthened and having power over you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think you could link intrusive thoughts to DID, dissociative identity disorder?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Because dissociative identity disorder comes with overwhelming amount of stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of disorders that way can be located back. Disorders have a strong comorbidity, but not necessarily. It's not a, it's almost like correlation doesn't cause, correlation doesn't mean causation. That's what
okay.
So I'm not going right. to be too fussed on linking it.
Right. Fair enough.
But it does have a very strong link with PTSD.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. So PTSD, anorexia, eating disorder.
Mm-hmm. And CPTSD as well? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Now, can we talk about hypersexuality? What is hypersexuality and what are symptoms?
So hypersexuality is compulsive behavior mm-hmm. to some extent and obsessive thoughts on another extent, where we are constantly like flooded with sexual thoughts, behaviors, fantasies, urges, or, you know, just completely preoccupied with it. Sometimes mm-hmm. with, you know, sometimes you have control over it and sometimes you don't have control over it. So mm-hmm. it does get linked to, say, porn addiction and masturbation, or unfortunately, it does have some connections with child sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what it is. And and just hypersexuality is not to be confused with someone who has a larger sexual appetite. So okay. someone who, you know, enjoys sex more than another person, like in friends they'll joke and they say, oh, you're very hypersexual or you have a mm-hmm. sex addiction. No, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
appetite and sexual appetite differ from person to person, right? Somebody has a low sexual appetite, somebody has a high sexual appetite. But the thing that differentiates high sexual appetite and hypersexuality clinically is the amount of hampering that it does to someone's life. So does it, if say someone has a high sexual drive or a high sexual appetite, they will still go to work and attend that meeting, right? But if someone's going through a hypersexuality disorder, they will be unable to sit through the meeting and need instant gratification to feel better or to feel present in the moment. So every time, you know, people look at diagnosis and disorders, one thing that's very important to remember is how much that area affects your overall daily living.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, hypersexuality is also an escape. It starts as a defense mechanism sometimes, because if something is bothering me and I know that, you know, thinking about fantasies or acting on sexual impulses is going to make me feel better, even if temporarily so, it becomes a defense mechanism that later again becomes a pattern, becomes a habit, and becomes a behavior.
Right. So you spoke about porn addiction, right? Do you think hypersexuality can be caused due to someone's inactive sex life, or someone's just, you know, not really happy that they, that they aren't sexually active?
No.
Do you think that could be a cause?
No.
Okay. Can we talk about delusions? I think this is something that is very casually thrown around by a lot of people nowadays. Like, if something happens, you know, they're delusional. You know, that's something that they use very commonly. Which, I mean, I'm not sure what they mean when they say that. But can we talk about what delusions are and what are their symptoms?
Okay, so delusion is a symptom in itself, and because delusions and hallucinations go hand in hand in, you know, lay conversations, I want to address both. Mm-hmm. So delusion is an unshakable belief in something. So if I say that I am the prime minister of the country, I believe it, and nothing you can say will convince me otherwise. So you say, why am I not living, in the prime minister's house? Or why do I not have an escort of cars around? And I'm going to have an answer for it. Mm-hmm. So I believe it. And for me to be able to differentiate what is real and what is, you know, imaginary, or what is real and what is imagined, it's not possible because I believe my reality. So that kind of an unshakable belief, if linking it to paranoia that we spoke about in the beginning, if I believe that my partner is trying to poison me, I am going to believe that, and I'm not going to eat the food that my partner gives me because I'm convinced that they're doing this. So it may not be the reality, so as to say, but it does become the client's reality. And hallucinations, very simply said, are you perceiving a stimuli in the absence of a stimuli. I felt like I just read this out of my textbook from a few years ago, but it stuck with me, right? So it's like I am talking to someone sitting on the chair opposite of me where nobody can see that, right? I am perceiving that stimuli. For me, that person exists. For me, that person is there. If I'm hearing voices from, I don't know, the pillows on my bed, they are coming for me. Like, they are real. I can actually hear it. So when you do brain imaging for people who are experiencing hallucinations, you see the same changes that happens when, say, you know, like the neurotypical population talks to another person. So that change is happening. The brain is perceiving it. It's real for them. It's just that obviously there is a disconnect from reality, and both hallucinations and delusions go into, the spectrum of psychosis and bipolarity. So bipolarity or bipolar is part of the mood spectrum where you have extremely high fluctuations, you know, and you feel like you're on top of the world and it's amazing, and it comes in the form of hypomania and mania. And the lows are absolutely in depression. But on both spectrums, if it's extremely severe, you can see a few signs and symptoms of hallucinations or delusions coming in.
Right. So you spoke about people feeling on top of the world, right? Do you think people who are more prone to substances are, like, people who use substances are more prone to hallucinations than delusions?
I'm so glad you asked this because, yes, a little walk down biology is that we've got a we've got a neurotransmitter in our brain called serotonin, which affects how we feel, and you know, it kind of has a monopoly over anxiety and depression. Very simply said so. And the more you consume drugs, especially weed and hash, it goes in kind of messes with serotonin and dopamine and is likely to cause disorders and, you know, make you feel or make you see things that aren't there. We all know how psychedelics work, right? It's just that everybody has a different tolerance for it. Everybody has a different gene makeup. So for someone, 100 exposures to it can do nothing. And for someone, one exposure can be, you know, the be all and end all of it. So, I mean, avoid drugs as much as you can.
Kids need to hear this, man. A lot of kids, honestly.
Yeah. But that's also why the mental health issues are rising. Because, I mean, if I speak about the generation that was above us, like our parents' generation, they also did their share of drugs. But it started for them when they were in college. In our generation, or not even my generation, in the generation that's in school right now, class 7, class 8, and they're fluent in drugs and how to do them. So, of course, it's a growing brain. And if you're giving the growing brain something that's harmful for them as opposed to something that's beneficial for them, it is going to have repercussions.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, nowadays, class 7 kids know how to roll a joint and all. I was like, wow, that is something very shocking, you know, like when I was in class 7, I'd never even thought of that. So, that's quite a shock. But yeah, I agree with what you said. Also, like, don't you think a lot of kids, not kids, okay, I just say in general, don't you think a lot of people use terms like hallucination and delusions too casually? Like, I have seen it happen, like, a lot. Like, the other day I was playing table tennis with my friends and I told them the ball hit the net, and I told this to them, I think, more than 10 times because I genuinely felt it hit the net. They're like, no, you're hallucinating it. I was like, I'm not. They were just not believing me. And then they kept saying that I keep hallucinating stuff and all that. And then, you know, in general, I see a lot of people saying you're delusional and all of that. Do you think this is right? Do you think it's right? I don't think it's right at all.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's just not with hallucinations or delusions, but with anything that catches, any mental health term that catches the attention of pop culture. So someone's extremely particular about what they're doing, it becomes OCD, right? Yeah. I walked past this coffee shop in somewhere near Hoskas that said OCD, obsessed coffee disorder. And I got down from my car and I had a big fight with the owner saying that, you know, you're ostracizing a part of the population for whom it is a daily struggle, right? You're not being sensitive. It's like calling toxic friends cancerous and you have a cancer patient at home. It's not on. I could be upset or I could be, you know, heartbroken about a breakup and it turns to, oh, don't be so depressed, you'll get over it. I am not depressed.
Yeah.
So hallucinations, don't be psychotic. You're being so psychotic. Are they? No, they're not being psychotic. They may be acting out of character and they may be being unreasonable, right? Or you could be imagining the ball hitting the net. I could be passionate about coffee. There is like a massive vocabulary in like so many languages. So to resort to using mental health labels is something that's just not acceptable to me. And not so much because it does label the person that you're talking about, but because you're being insensitive and outright discriminating against the population that undergoes those issues and they have a tough time dealing with it. There is enough stigma. We don't need to add to it. So I'm like, this is something that just doesn't sit well.
It's sort of invalidating their feelings because how casually people use these terms. I feel like even like a lot of these artists, like musical artists and even I'd say even podcasts and, you know, just YouTubers, all of these people in the media industry, basically, they use these terms very casually in their songs and their movies and all of that, which is also a reason why people think it's okay to use it casually, you know, like, I don't know if you know Olivia Rodrigo, if that's how they are.
I do. Yeah.
And one of her song goes like something like a damn sociopath.
Yeah.
See, Olivia's 18. I don't think she knew what she meant or what she wrote in that. And the thing is, it's become a thing on Instagram Reels now. I don't know if you spend your time on Reels a lot, But literally, it's a trend now that people dance to this song, like, you know, like a damn sociopath. And I don't think people understand what it means. And, like, literally, everyone is like, I think it's something to do with her ex-boyfriend. She calls him a sociopath.
And that gives a card for a lot of, you know, for a lot of folks of that age to then start calling their exes as sociopaths.
So, yeah. And yeah, I don't understand, like, they had like a breakup and all that. I mean, I obviously don't know the details of it. I mean, I'm pretty sure nobody does. But, you know, now every teenager is going around, like, okay, you're a sociopath. So, it's so annoying. Like, I don't think half of them know the meaning. And even if they do know the meaning, they're like, okay, Olivia said it, why can't we? Like, exactly. I think that's like, if I had to term it, it's a toxic role model. Olivia must be a great person. I have nothing against her. But she is a toxic role model for these teenagers. Because the influence that she's having on them is not correct. In my opinion, not at all. So, yeah, not a big fan of Olivia.
And if you have a public, we got that. But if you have a public voice, you need to make sure that you're using it very consciously. And a lot of times when you call these things out, it becomes, oh, you're being really sensitive. I didn't mean it like that. And, you know, calm down, and they'll start quoting every other thing to you. But, I mean, you have to be responsible about what you're putting out there.
Yeah. And even, like, so many of these artists who write about suicide, they write it obviously because their rhyme scheme is, you know, matching it. But I don't think they understand how serious the issue is. Like, one of my favorite artists, one of his songs says, late nights get the worst of me, suicide thoughts come and go like a guest to me. And I just didn't find that hitting very right, because I feel like he obviously put it in for his rhyme scheme. Mm-hmm. And there's no trigger warning, there's nothing, it's just there. Yeah, I feel like media's influence is like a lot on teenagers, especially.
And it's not like we as a society don't know how to make a human cry, right? Today, in India, if you start calling out gods or Hindu sentiments in songs, there will be a massive clapback.
Yeah.
But people know that they can't get away with it for right reasons or wrong reasons. I'm not getting into that. But people know that they won't get away with it. So they won't do it. But people know they will be able to get away with saying things about, you know, mental health or passing character judgments or to a, you know, or just, I don't know, magnifying body image issues. So they do it.
Yeah, so I don't know. Hmm. Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah, I think Indian cinema, I think in general, is like really, really toxic.
Really,
like,
problematic and really needs to grow.
Yeah. Like, something I discussed in that I did 2 episodes back, like, there's a movie called Half Girlfriend. I don't know if you've seen it. In the movie, there's one part where Arjun Kapoor's friend, his roommate basically, tells him that if you think that the girl, basically, I think it was who's the actress in the movie? Whoever
Shraddha
it was.
Kapoor.
He's like, if you think that she really likes you, there's only one way to find out, and that's if she has sex with you. So you see the thought that they're putting out. Like, I feel like, obviously, I'm way older, I understand that's not the right thought, but for people who look up to these actors, 12, 13 year old kids, or even 11 year old kids, I feel like they are influenced by media a lot in their younger days. And if they watch this growing up, they are going to be ingrained with that thought, right?
And even so, people your age, right? It does become a, oh yeah, it was in the movie, right? It does promote a sense of non-consensual physical intimacy or of rape culture, if I may go that far. So people could be 29 and 30 and watching it. And if they want to believe it, and if it fits with their schema, they will. If it doesn't fit with an 11-year-old's upbringing, an 11-year-old may not resonate with it. So our upbringing is also in question here. And I wouldn't limit it to a younger audience.
Fair enough. I think I was just more focused on the whole the younger people. Yeah, and also adding to what he said, even after that, after that scene, what happened is she didn't agree, obviously, to have sex with him, right? So he slapped her because he thought she was wrong. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't get it. Really not a huge fan of Indian cinema.
Don't take no from a girl. That's the message that goes. Even in Ae Dil Hai Mushkil, right? I mean,
yeah.
The entire movie was problematic. And for actors like Anushka Sharma, Ranbir Kapoor and Aishwarya Rai to go ahead and do that movie. Karan Johar is written it in what state of mind? I don't want to get into that. But for actors who are quote-unquote woke and stand up for so many rights, to do that is mm-hmm. advocating that voice. I like a lot of what Anushka Sharma says, but she doing that is also part of her, you know, larger media voice or whatever. And it's
just... yeah, I feel like, I mean, I get there's one side to them that they're doing this for money, but they also need to understand that the harmful effect, like the negative impact that they're going to have on their audience. Like, I feel like there's no point in making all the money if you can't really promote or portray.
Yeah, and how much money do you sell your soul for?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Or then take accountability and say that I added to this narrative and I would like to correct that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my God. Like, talking about Indians and all this gets me so angry now, honestly. I used to be a fan, but like really now... grown up, I've understood it's not really something to be proud of. Like, just really not, honestly.
Again, I'm not going to put it in a black and white picture. It's got its good and
positives.
Bad. It's blanket thing at all.
Yeah. But it promotes a lot of wrong things as well, which is why I don't
know. Of course it does, absolutely.
Anyway, lastly, could we talk about body-focused repetitive behaviors and body dysmorphia?
Okay, so I am going to pick up body dysmorphia from what you said, purely because mm-hmm. it does link with the Bollywood bashing that we just did, where it is, it's very simply said, right? And it's way more than what I'm going to speak about. But mm-hmm. very simply said, it is that you're extremely, extremely preoccupied with flaws that might be there or might be perceived by you. So one pimple can let someone go down a spiral, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're constantly checking yourself to see if you look good or not good. It leads to people avoiding social situations to say, I'm not looking good. Mm-hmm. And you can tell them that they're looking good. But mm-hmm. the way that you see them versus the way that they see themselves is extremely, it's just not aligned, mm-hmm. right? So it is feeling like my body and my face is not good enough and, you know, I have to constantly do better or I have to work at it and I'm just not good enough and everyone will think I'm ugly. And it's on the rise because of social media projections where everything is perfect and photoshopped. And, you know, I don't know if you saw that Kendall Jenner post where she looks like an hourglass, to say the least. And the mm-hmm. internet, like, lost its mind because it was like, how is that possible? And it did lead to people facing a lot of body image issues and to the point where she had to come out and say that this is a good day and this is a lot of makeup that's led me to look that way. But as a population, I feel like we're leaning towards bullying and, you know, everything needs to be perfect and you need to be the dream child with good hair and perfect. Everything that does add to it and you constantly feel inadequate with how you look. So that mm-hmm. is that in a very, very simple nutshell is body dysmorphia. And mm-hmm. there are people who go to extreme measures to get it corrected and media doesn't help. The kind of things that we consume virtually and in just different manners, it does not help with that. So it's that disillusionment or it's that conflict.
I feel like, and like to add to this, I feel like it's like a very long time, and I'm pretty sure, it's been like a long time. For some reason, media has always portrayed fat as bad, thin as good, fair as good.
Yeah.
Dark skin that's bad, and that's how it is. You know, they differentiate what they tend to say what's good and bad. I feel like they are no one to decide firstly what's good and bad. And another thing that adds to this is social media. Now I hate social media so much for this because people on social media tend to set standards. You know, body standards, beauty standards, all of that. Like so many people who make workout videos, they're like, if you want to get the perfect body, what is a perfect body? Why is their definition of a perfect body being thin or, like, you know, having abs and all of that? Even for boys, I feel like so many boys are like, oh, you know, we want to get ripped, we want to build, that's like a very good body. I feel like however you are, it's a good body as long as you're happy with it. I feel like people pleasing has become a very huge thing on social media.
Absolutely. Like
I see this on Twitter so often, like, you know, people put out tweets as a joke or even sometimes seriously that, girl, you may be good looking, but you end no Addison Rae. I was like, firstly, she's not here to please your beauty standards, okay? And if she isn't Addison Rae, that does not mean she doesn't look good. you know, you can't, what is this comparison that you're making? It's her life. If she thinks she looks good, she looks good. I don't think you are anyone to decide. Obviously, you can have your own opinion, but you don't need to, you know, put it out on the internet like this and make people, like, thousands of people feel insecure about their own body or, you know, their own looks and all that. I think that's like, the biggest downside to social media. Like, a lot of people, like, and even this thing, like, there's a lot of social media videos that will say, you know, so-and-so person has done this at 18 years of age. What are you doing at 18? I feel like you're not always meant to do something at 18. You know, like how we spoke before this. You told me that at 17, you hadn't done what I'm doing and all that. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you did something wrong or I'm doing something extra. We're different people. We're not meant to do certain things at certain age. It's our wish when we want to do stuff, right? If I want to work at a later age, I will work at a later age. I feel like internet now, just like media as a whole, just defines certain things and, you know, they categorize what is good, what is bad. And I feel like it's not there or anyone's place to do that. Like, as long as someone is happy with how they're feeling about themselves, it should be completely okay and not a problem to anyone, I'd say.
110%. Everyone's got their own trajectory. So to want to make, you know, as many people as possible fit into one blueprint is just counterproductive to individuality. And as much as social media is to blame, it does start even before that. Families will be like, oh, kali hai, shaadi kise hogi? Yeah, like, otherwise, oh, ladka itna chota hai, kya hoga?
Yeah.
From there, and, you know, haldi laga lo, doodh laga lo, whatever. Can it come as packaged as self-care? Absolutely. But does it come as that? No. It comes as, hey, these are your flaws and this is something you should be insecure about. And a lot of times people feel like these, you know, issues or disorders or, that they affect just women. But no, they affect men too.
Yeah.
To a large extent. Boys grow up feeling extremely inadequate.
Yeah. And I feel
A lot of it goes back to self-esteem and how we raise our, you know, children, the kind of feedback and the kind of validation we give them, be it from parents, siblings, us as, you know, like adult figures of society or teachers, all of that. It binds us back.
Yeah. And I feel like also the culture that we are brought up in is a main reason for, you know, certain problems. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this or if you've experienced it, but like Indian parents, like ever since we were young, if we ever fall down, they always tell you that, oh, no, don't worry, you've not got hurt, you're fine. They never cry, it's okay, you got hurt. They don't let you express your emotions. And
why are you crying? What is there to cry?
Yeah, it's always that. And like, and you know, the whole thing about if you don't eat well and if you are not, you know, built up well, kisse shaadi hogi and all of that. And
it's just our obsession with like marriage.
Marriage,
everything starts and ends with marriage. Yeah, it doesn't, we don't perpetuate the narrative that marriages need to be healthy, that marriages need to, you know, come with mutual respect and mutual response or shared responsibility. It just comes with shaadi kar lo. Till the point, till you're getting married, please be thin, pretty, handsome, fair, getting a good package. Uske baad tumhe jo karna hai life ke saath kar lo. So, I mean, our starting goal in a lot of cases for our children is flawed.
Yeah, how we raise them, for sure. And I don't really like our culture a lot.
It's good, it's bad. I think we all have to work towards it one step at a time.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I feel like over here, we're pressured a lot to get a job at an early age so that, you know, before you're getting married, you can show the girl side or the guy side that you have a stable income and all that. I feel like that's such a rubbish thing. Like, okay, I understand being stable in life, but there are some professions where you don't earn till like a certain point, like psychology only. You don't earn till you finish your master's, and that's like probably 6 years more since you're 18, so probably when you're 24, 25. And for some reason, I think in Indian households and just in India, people think that the ideal age for marriage is 24 or 25. Like, that is the age you should get married. Or 26 max. After that, they think, koi nahi milega. To get married at 30s, I don't know. They see it as some sin over here. Getting married at 30s.
Although I'm very proud of the generation that's coming up because they're taking a stand and they're not falling into norms. So, I mean, got to give them the points for this.
Yeah, for sure. And I hope there's a change for the generations to come as well, and it doesn't be the same as our generation. I wouldn't say mine, honestly. I'd say probably your generation, because you are a generation before me. So, you are a generation before me, right? Yeah.
Yes, I am a generation before you. Yeah, thanks for making me feel old. Remind me to never come and chat with you again.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, oh, wait, she is older than me. I was going to say, yeah, we're from the same generation. I was like, nah.
No, we're not. No, thanks for rubbing this in. We're nipping here now.
But yeah, that was quite a fun conversation. I feel towards the end, I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed it. It was fun. Yeah,
hopefully, Olivia fans, Bollywood fans, don't abuse us in messages and email.
He's only sending Aman hate mail. He's doing a lot for his age, and like, he's really swamped with this, so please don't do that.
Yes, thank you. And I think I enjoyed that. I learned a lot of things.
Still
lives. Yeah, yes.
I'm going to jail today. Like, this is it. I made two problematic statements.
it's fine. I mean, it's as long as it's real, I think people should understand. Except maybe some people. I wouldn't name who.
I think we should stop talking before we're both in the police van. So, yeah.
But yeah, quite an enjoyable episode. I think I learned a lot today. Like, I mean, all of what you spoke, obviously, it was there in my theory book, but not as detailed, I think, as you explained it. And I feel like I've learned a lot, and it'll help me a lot in my years to come, obviously, for sure. So, thank you, Arshi, for being with
us
today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It was really lovely.
Yes. And to everyone who's listening, Cleo, thank you for listening, and I'll see you guys in the next episode.